Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 172. On this week's review, we are going to dive into the history of Condor Man and also discuss very briefly Universal's big reveal coming up on August the 1st. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype, the nightmare tool that it is, but a necessary nightmare, is, of course, Courtney. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And also joining us is Movie Guy 365, Adam Corbett. Say hello, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Pete. And hello to all of you joining in this week. As always, this episode is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. We are lastgenpodcast.com. That's our website. And we have a Twitter. Melissa, what's our Twitter?
At Diz Magic Hour Pod.
We have a Facebook. If you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can find it right there. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Instagram. We are Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And, of course, we have our Patreon over at /Disney Magic Hour. And we'll be going back to the well on that one now that we have a little more of a sustained flow that we're going to be going forward. Adam, you do Movie Guy 365. Can you share your info with everyone?
Absolutely. You can find me over at YouTube at MovieGuy365. I do videos every single day over there. And you can find me over at Twitter and Instagram at MovieGuy365.
And on that note, I believe you put a video out today in response to this whole Universal thing, correct? Or was that a fever dream?
That was a fever dream. I was talking about the Regal Unlimited price plan.
That's what you were talking about. And that seems not great. That seemed like they screwed it up by hiding a bunch of fees.
Shocking.
Which is unfortunate because the more and more you see it, as much as MoviePass was absolutely caught on fire and is still going down that hill in full flames, the model of, hey, you're not going to pay per movie, that is obviously the forced future of movie theater going. And but you said they are charging basically surcharges for anything other than a 2D screening, correct?
Well, yes. In addition to being, you're obligated for 12 months, no matter which one. You can pay it all at once, or gross, you can pay monthly. And you also get charged a fee for using the app, and you also get charged if you decide to go 3D IMAX or RPX.
Wait.
It could be up to $15.
Wow.
Wait, take a step back. You get charged for using the app?
Yes, you do.
That doesn't even make sense.
I don't get it. Wait.
So if you get a movie time and you quote unquote buy it through the app, they will charge you, I believe it's 50 cents to $3 depending on your location.
What?
On top of a surcharge if you go beyond a 2D picture.
That's nuts.
Oh, wow. Well done, Regal.
Yeah.
That's impressively terrible. Holy Christ.
I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, look, we got to do this thing. And someone's like, fine, you want to do it? I'm going to make it the worst thing possible. And no one's going to do it just to prove that we shouldn't have done it. And like,
the amount being based on location, that makes sense. That's something that we've seen before. MoviePass was like that.
Yeah.
Alamo Season Pass is also like that. You know, mm-hmm. Buying an all-year ticket in Brooklyn is more expensive than, say, I believe they have one in Ohio.
Well,
Iowa. They have one in Iowa.
Isn't it like that for like regular movie theaters? Like our base ticket is not necessarily the same as like Long Island's base ticket used to be.
I think so. I don't know. I've been on the AMC thing for so long. So like, I guess that's a good, you know, one to put it up against. The AMC, whatever it's
A-lister.
Called. A-list. Yeah.
A-list, yeah.
I pay for it. I don't even know what it's called. That is $20
Dibs.
A month, three movies a week.
How could you forget Joni Stubbs?
That's right. And you can do, you know, you can go see whatever you want. There's no upgrade charges or anything like that. The down thing is having to go to an AMC if that's your only choice. I know some people have AMCs near them. They love them. My AMC, one of them is fine. The other one is at Disney Springs, and that's just not a theater you want to frequent all the time because it's just obnoxiously loud. So, all right. Well, you know, onward and offward with Regal really showing everyone how not to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll see. Maybe they'll learn really quick and they'll do something. So back to the note at hand. On this Thursday at 10 a.m., I'm assuming Eastern Coast time, since it has to do with Universal Orlando. Universal is going to be holding a press conference, basically detailing something epic is coming, as the graphic they put up. Seems like, you know, that is going to be the name of the park, Epic Lands or Epic Worlds or whatever they want to call it. Everyone was calling it Fantastic Worlds for a long time, which I'll give the people who reported that initially credit. There was always a raised eyebrow at that, because the other part of this was that people were expecting Fantastic Beasts of the Harry Potter world to be part of it. So calling your park Fantastic Worlds and then having Fantastic Beasts within it, and then mixed with like Nintendo and Universal Monsters and, you know, How to Train Your Dragon for some reason, that is confusing. I think that's really confusing for people coming to visit. So,
especially because Universal is known for the Harry Potter, you know, areas. Yeah,
I think you would have a lot of people who would come down thinking it's an entire Harry Potter park.
Yeah.
And then they would say, I remember those movies with the dragons. They're on Netflix. Sure. And, you know, none of them will.
Hey, when we went to Knoxville, they had people build like life, not life size, but almost life size replicas.
They were. You actually pointed it out. You pointed it out and said, that's one of the dragons from Train Your Dragon. I was like, is it?
It was both of them. It was the dark one and the light one.
Melissa basically did the Chappie meme, where if you're watching Chappie with someone, when Chappie shows up on screen, you lean over and whisper, that's Chappie.
That's me.
I like doing that with every movie, even if I'm by myself. I've been doing that quite a bit. Spider-Man comes up, I'm like, that's Spider-Man. So you know, the obvious thing is, hey, they're going to announce this park. The fun thing is what is going to be in it. Nintendo seems the biggest lockdown. It's going to be there.
Yeah, because they're doing a whole big Nintendo area in Japan initially, right?
Yeah, that one's going to open before here, because the initial announcement was it was going to be worked into the existing parks, or it wasn't announced that way and people just assumed that. And now it has been pushed out to here. The big key to that is, when they announce it on Thursday, do they say the word Zelda? Because one of the other big rumors that's been floating around forever is that of, what's that mythology land in Islands of Adventure?
Mythos?
No, that's the restaurant. It was the best restaurant, like 1998, 5 years running, in case you forgot that.
The Mythical Island.
Yeah, it's something like that. That's Island going to become a Zelda all on its own. And so you'll have your own Zelda land.
But when it rains, you can't walk.
Yeah, you can't climb anything when it rains. And you have to cook your own food. And it might be garbage.
As long as it makes that little jingle, I'm okay.
Also, if it starts lightning, you got to throw your phone away, or you'll be struck by lightning and murdered immediately. You'll get some warning shocks first. Guys, you should really play Breath of the Wild. If you haven't played it, Breath of the Wild is really good. Never use a horse. It's stupid. Walk around. So, yeah, I don't know. Melissa, do you have any hopes for something to be included within this announcement?
No, I'm so blind on, like, what IPs Universal has and or what they can do with them, because we've seen what Universal can do and what Universal shouldn't do. So I'm kind of just in the I'll see it when I see it camp. Like, I mean, I think How to Train Your Dragon area could be really cool if they do it like a Harry Potter, but it could also be garbage if they do it like, you know, Fast and Furious. So,
all right. So I forgot who I was talking to about this, and I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to say who I was talking to about it. So it's better off that I forgot. Sorry to whoever I talked to about this. I had heard that the hub is like a general admittance hub. It's open. You can just walk in there without a ticket. And then you will use your ticket at the four different gates that then go into the different lands. So you don't walk from one land to the next, because they're all kind of carted off from each other.
That which sounds interesting.
It actually does kind of sounds interesting. The only thing, and I go ahead. I think you're going to say the same thing that I said to them.
Because it's going to be like, oh, everyone's just going to funnel into this one like more popular land than the other. And how do you manage like crowd control? Do you only let certain amount of people in? Because I'm sure the land has a capacity and it's not like you can overflow it.
Well, the thing is, though, you're talking about any time a new land opens.
Yeah, but at least in like in Pandora, like they were able to like close the land to, you know, too many people.
Well, this one would be even easier because there's a gate.
But that's the thing. Like, so then like, are you just forcing everyone to get to that one part of the park that you want to go to at a certain time? And then I don't know, it just kind of seems like a poor business model, because then there's not even like a, oh well, this area is really busy, I'll just go over here, and it's like I have to go out and go to the other entrance. Like, unless they flow it really well, it just kind of sounds
like the flow would be that you go into one world, exit that world, go into another one.
Which
I like the concept of. The only thing that worries me is that Universal is slow,
yeah,
when it comes to getting you through the front gates.
Yeah,
the whole thing with like, if there's too many people in the land, I don't know, that's a problem with any new land, so that doesn't bother me. It's the whole thing of I love Universal, but getting through the front gate takes way too long, and it's never that busy that it should take that long. And so if you're asking me to get scanned at every land, it seems like a time suck. But if you are building these inclusive little pieces, then it could be really, really nice.
The entrance exit portion of that kind of, from a logistics perspective, makes me really...
I mean, that's how Diagon Alley works, though.
But and that's the thing. Like, it doesn't. Like, there's multiple exits and entrances to that land.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, there is. We always happen to go in one, but there is a second one.
Yeah, but it's just 5 feet down the where. That's
yeah,
the thing,
I know. But now, if you have to have like people scanning,
that's what I'm saying.
But if you have to have scanning, people,
I understand.
Stuff,
that's
like,
my concern. Towards like how you get into Diagon Alley, there's the front entrance. There's two entrances in the front, but it's all the front. You can't leave out of the back. So that would be the idea. So we will see. We'll find out more. Adam, do you have any interest? I mean, is there anything they could announce that would get you really hyped up for this?
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to a classic Universal Monsters, and I want to see a Dracula castle. Yeah. That can't get me in fast enough, honestly. I would bolt on down to Orlando just for that.
Does it turn upside down?
That would be my big thing too. Courtney, are you in that boat?
I'm definitely in that boat. I have another thing that I would like Fantastic Beasts, and I'd like them to figure out a way for us to travel by flu to America. Like, I think that would be super, super cool.
Oh, you mean from one park to the other?
Well, yeah. Because that they'd have to figure out a way, because they already have the train going from Hogsmeade to Diagon Alley. So if they could figure out a way,
that
some
would
sort
be
of
something.
Ride, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, but I think that's way too far away.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. These are like, I think they're a bus ride in between each other as is.
Yeah.
This is more like in the Disney area of... You would need a monorail or something like that, or a mono train, but that would be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Magical in New York sounds really great.
Mm-hmm. Set in the 20s or something. That would be cool.
Yeah. To have that whole feel to it, I think that would be a lot of fun. It could be more entertaining than the movies, one could think.
It would also be really cool, like with Adam, like if you were doing the Universal Monsters, like, I don't know if you could do it, but it would be really cool if they found a way to do it and like actually make the entire land in black and white.
Yeah. Oh,
like that would be really cool.
We talked about that before on here. Yeah,
did we?
Yeah, yeah. We're hoping the house is like that this year too.
Oh,
that actually might be a good. Well, I guess they would say it probably on Thursday if there's concept art. You know, you would see it. But my hope is that it's all monochrome. I don't know if that's a thing you can do. But I would absolutely kill for it to all be monochrome.
Then I can go in like my Pleasantville outfit and it would be really fun.
And then they would kill you for being a harlot because you would have some pigment on your skin.
No, I would do the gray.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. Let's just have Ed Wood walk around with Bela Lugosi.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Poor man. So, yeah. I hope it's... I mean, obviously Nintendo's exciting.
Yeah.
But personally, I'm more excited about if they did a Zelda land on its own. But I'm equally excited for both of that. I don't really care about How to Train Your Dragon, but I don't really care about Avatar the movie.
You
know what I
mean?
Like,
you should really watch the movies because they're pretty good.
You are a fan of Roger Deakins. His fingerprints are all over those films.
Yeah, but he doesn't write the stories.
No, but like, no, but visually. I mean, the visual. Like, you know,
I've seen the visuals. I mean, Jay Baruchel, is that his name? He's had the same voice for like 15 years.
Yeah.
So I know him. I don't know. They seem really pleasant, but they just don't seem like, hey, I got an idea. We're going to spend millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars on a land themed to a trilogy that, I don't know, exists.
I think you should see it, Pete. I think that you might have a different opinion.
I'll see it. I'll definitely see it. I know I sat through most of the first one, and I was like, okay, it's better than most of the stuff that any, you know, DreamWorks or Illumination, whichever part of it they are, had done.
Yeah. And like you said, Dragons. Like, you aren't a fan of the Avatar movie, yet Pandora is beautiful. So I think that even though the How to Train Your Dragon movies are really good, like, I think if they do the land really well, it'll be even more inviting.
Yeah. The only disappointing thing will be if we get a bunch of screens again.
Yeah.
If we get just a bunch of Gringot clones, it's going to be real depressing. Well, I mean, yeah.
Ride a dragon.
But... But what does that consist of? Me sitting on a dragon? I don't know. I don't.
But the thing is, like, Flight of Passage is you're sitting on a dragon, but like, it's done so well.
Universal never has the temperance not to be like, and then there's a fire attack, and then there's a water attack. You know, that's all it is. It's a series of unfortunate events every time.
No, that's the other one.
That's the Godzilla, the latest Godzilla movie where, you know, they couldn't turn a car on without it having to be like a 5-minute action sequence. Like, oh my god, where are the keys? Then they find the keys. Like, oh my god, it won't turn on. It's like, shut up and show me Godzilla. Yeah. So that was my Godzilla review, everyone.
Very nice.
In case you were wondering.
Nice.
Universal. Oh, and maybe Pokemon. I guess Pokemon should be a thing. That's really popular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is.
The little mime Pokemon, that'd be good.
Mr. Mime, please.
Don't act like you watch Pokemon just because you listen to a show where the people on it watch Pokemon.
I used to watch Pokemon a lot. And then after...
Name 10 Pokemon.
Jigglypuff, Bulbasaur, Squirtle.
That I don't know.
Charizard.
Yeah, no.
Dig Dug. No.
Dig Dug is a video game.
Dig Dug.
Dug Trio, that's it. Dug Trio.
Dug Trio?
Yeah, that's the evolution.
And who told you that?
Doug Duo is the...
Is this all from the mouth of Jeff Gerstmann?
No. I watched the show.
I don't believe you.
And I had the Pokemon Snap game, and if you got Jigglypuff singing and you'd fall asleep...
Pokemon got me to Disney World one year because I took all of the cards that you got when going to see the Pokemon movie, sold them on eBay, and went to Disney World. Thank you, Pokemon.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I wasn't there. Highly illegal,
too. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a movie review. Ring the bells.
Yeah, we do.
Ring the bells. Richard Belzer, special guest star. Actually, I saw a hashtag not Richard Belzer in public recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was going to tell him, like, hey, you look somewhat like Richard Belzer.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, but you know Pokemon names? Stop it.
At least five.
Mew and Mewtwo.
Come on, you know Popplio? Everyone knows. Is that a thing?
That's the thing. That's one of the newer generation.
Pop.
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 That's the newer generation, though. After our past 152.
Like, you didn't say Pikachu.
I did.
Did you?
You did not say Pikachu.
You did not say Pikachu.
I was trying to not go for the one that everyone knows.
Oh, good. So Squirtle and Bulbasaur and Charizard. The real deep cuts. All right. Okay, let's talk about Condor Man. Maybe he's a Pokemon. Condor Man, released on August 7th, 1981. Thank God the internet told me because no one else would have known. Clocking in at possibly the longest 90 minutes of my life. It has left zero concrete evidence of what it actually made at the box office.
Oh, I got...
But several sites copy and pasted from one another. And they say that on a budget of $14 million, it lost money. It lost nearly $10 million, meaning, assumedly, it made about $4 million.
Oh, I got that Disney reportedly lost $9.5 million. I don't know how the math works out.
$9.5 minus the $14 million budget. So, yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
I don't know if that's right. That's a thing.
I don't math.
Normally, these things actually have numbers associated with them, and these were just a couple of articles, one of them being the wiki entry. So that's just random news.
That's where I go.
Oh, by the way, good thing to note. When you search for Condor Man on Google, you will also find out that people also search for Agent Cody Banks, Agent Cody Banks 2, and The Spy Next Door.
Those are good movies.
Yeah. So
better than Condor Man.
What a crop. The film was inspired by the book by Robert Sheckley, The Game of X, a book which never utters the phrase Condor Man. And description goes as such. All secret agents need to look out for William Nye, also known as Agent X. His recruitment was simple, and his legend is brilliant but unearned. Somehow, he thinks he's the best there is, and we all know how pride goeth before fall. The master of SFF, this is all about Robert Sheckley now, the master of science fiction hilarity and biting social satire, creates a spy world that has gathered praise from the greats of the genre. So, from that description, they basically took the what if we made a satire comedy film in the vein of 007. So much that if you look at the poster for Condor Man, the movie poster, and compare it to virtually most Bond films, Never Say Never Again, I believe, is one of them. Live and Let Die is another one. GoldenEye has a number of it. He's mimicking the pose that he always does. The one leg crossed over, the arm and the two arms into an L with the, holding the gun. So he's actually Michael Crawford. Michael Crawford, the lead, the sexy lead of this movie, who kisses like a man who's never kissed a woman before. But anyways, they're mimicking that pose in the poster. So, yeesh. The film was directed by Charles Jarrett, or Jarrow. I'm not sure if it's a silent T, like yogging, or it's a long J. He also helmed The Secret Life of Algernon, which actually starred Charles Dunning and Carrie Ann Moss, and Anne of a Thousand Days with Richard Burton. Also was a director on an anthology series titled Encounter, which is basically like it was on Canadian television, so you know it's good. Because actually they do a lot of really good TV in Canada. And it featured one-hour dramas. It has a pretty good cult following. The actual screenplay was written by Mark Stervdant, who only has one other writing credit to his name, and it's a single episode of Beretta. Like, what a random thing to have. Yeah. But he was an assistant director on 45 episodes of Frasier.
Sure.
So in a Venn diagram of Beretta, Frasier, and Condor Man,
this guy's in
Mark Stervdant sits at the middle of that, just happy as a plum.
I don't know what else you would put in that Venn diagram, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I really, drug use, maybe.
That's just a circle.
Possibly, though, the most head-scratching detail of the whole film is the cinematographer. I mean this in a way of, I don't understand how this film looks so bad, because Charles F. Wheeler had previously worked in the camera department on a number of really big films, just a couple of them. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Star Trek The Motion Picture, a.k.a. Oh My God, Let's Try to Make 2001 Again. Judgment at Nuremberg. And Tora, Tora, Tora. He was also the actual cinematographer for Disney's The Barefoot Executive. That's the poster has a monkey, I believe, in a suit eating a banana. So we have to go back to that. And Freaky Friday with Jodie Foster, which if you happen to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you saw a Jodie Foster-esque nod in that film. When on the set of a Western, because actually that's where Jodie Foster got her start, was on a Western. So with all of that, you don't see any of that show up on the screen. It's kind of incredible. And to put it even more incredible, the special effects team that did the flying in this were the same folks who worked on Superman. Sorry. The movie that looks better than this ever could and was filmed 2 years before it. Very weird. Ron Miller was the executive producer on the film, and it was filmed on location in Monte Carlo in Switzerland because they wanted to be a James Bond knockoff, but unfortunately no one really remembered. Film has a smattering of supporters, really, but it's largely forgotten. But Condor Man does appear in a Pixar short, Small Fry, as a discarded Happy Meal toy.
I saw that.
Yeah. So, but that's that. But there's actors in this movie. and actresses. Melissa.
There are.
Who them?
Actually, just to go back to the special effects stunt crew, did you actually mention the...
Ah, the James Bond connection.
Yeah, another James Bond connection.
Yeah, so when we start talking about the movie, the stunts were done by the by people who worked on the James Bond films of that time, of the Roger Moore era and stuff like that. And you can tell that, and it also has no business. It actually makes no sense. Those scenes in this movie seem so out of place.
Yeah, because specifically it was Remy Julien. He's the French stunt driver who worked not only on plenty of James Bond films, but he also worked on The Italian Job, the original.
Oh, cool. And McQueen.
Yeah. So, front-facing cast and crew. We'll start with our lead, our handsome lead, Woody.
Woody Wilkins.
What a name for a lead, I guess. Sure.
It's a double W. You got to do the double letters because it's a superhero film.
It's three because his name is really Woodrow Woody Wilkins.
Sure.
Woody's in quotes. Because it's his
name. Wait a minute.
It's his nickname.
That's not how that works. Nicknames don't get their own letter.
Sure they do.
It's okay.
Anyway, that's played by Michael Crawford, who you'll hopefully know from other things besides this movie. Most importantly, he was in Hello, Dolly. Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, I thought was a really fun title.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to pronounce it the way it's spelt, but... because I have to get really British for that.
Yeah.
And of course, he originated the role of the Phantom in The Phantom of the Opera. On what? It's a heavy sigh there.
It's such a weird thing to hear his voice and try to take it as like a serious action. Or not serious. It's not supposed to be serious. But just to hear his voice. Just to hear his voice is weird to me.
He actually also did a voice in an animated film called Once Upon a Forest, which was by 20th Century Fox in 1993. So now that we own 20th Century Fox, I figured that would be a good...
We own.
It's the royal we.
God, no, it isn't. We're not part of that royal we. What are you talking about?
I pay enough money. I'm part of it. Opposite him, we have the lovely Natalia Rombova. Rombava? I don't know. Played by Barbara Carrera, who, again, another Bond connection. You will have seen her, hopefully, in Never Say Never. She was Fatima in the James Bond film. She was also Maria in The Island of Dr. Moreau. But she also did a long stint on the Dallas TV show.
And just to point out, the Bond thing happened 2 years after, or 3 years after? 3 years after this movie.
Yeah. So they saw her and said, she is a Bond woman.
Yeah.
Get me that woman.
And unfortunately, she's in a really bad Bond film where Sean Connery is clearly past the expiration date.
I mean, I feel that was like role. 10 of them, but you know.
It wasn't 10 of them. I don't,
just joking. But we do have a very...
puzzling.
Puzzling cast here. The villain, Krokov. Played by Oliver Reed, who you may have seen in The Trap. Oliver, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Munchausen.
He was also in Treasure Island with Charlton Heston, Christian Bale, and Christopher Lee. I want to watch that one.
Is that a made-for-TV one?
I don't...
Oh, it is. It is a TV movie. Wow, look at that.
It was definitely one that I think I watched because it was like in the 1990s. I think that was definitely...
Sweet baby Jesus.
What?
Charlton Heston is Captain Long John Silver?
Yeah. And Christian Bale's the kid. And Christopher Lee is in it. Yeah, it had an amazing cast.
Julian Glover is in this too?
Like I said, it's an amazing cast.
I gotta see this.
Charlton Heston needs to hook me up with some of those hush puppies.
Oh my God, guys, it all just came together. Written, produced, and directed by Fraser C. Heston. Yeah. Is that his son or something?
Probably.
Ugh.
Dad, I'm going to make a movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you'll know, of course, Oliver Reed. He also, his last role, I'm assuming, was Gladiator. He was Proximo.
Yes, where he died.
And they had to use footage again.
Yeah, he died actually during the filming. And in one of the documentaries on the Gladiator disc, lovingly, Russell Crowe refers to him as a pisshead because he drank all the time. And that's what ultimately killed him.
That's what happens. Yeah. Then you'll have the funny American, Harry, played by James Hampton. He was kind of in that role a lot. Most notably, he was in F Troop. He played Dobbs. And he was also in Teen Wolf. He was the father, Harold. And the Teen Wolf TV series, of course. He was also in The Longest Yard as the caretaker. And Sling Blade, which I've never seen.
You've heard it. You've heard an imitation of it. Yeah. So, yeah. You should watch Sling Blade. I think you would really like it.
Then we had just a couple of, like, other characters, but they were kind of interesting. We have Morovic. He was played by a French actor-singer called Jean-Pierre Calfon.
Great name.
A lot of acting credits, all of them French movies. Could not find an English one in there that really anybody would know. But, yeah. And then Russ, who was Harry's boss, was played by Dana Elkar. You might know him from The Sting. He was in a lot of TV, including MacGyver, Guiding Light, Get Smart, Mission Impossible TV series, The A-Team, and Matlock. So he did a lot of TV. There was a credit here for Russian Agent. I tried finding when this guy popped up. I don't remember. It could have been during the time that I blacked out.
I think it's when they're escaping and he's dressed up like the Gene Wilder and the Frisco Kid.
Okay, well, either way, I wanted to mention this guy because you've seen him in like a million things. He literally has over 300 credits and he's still making movies. Vernon Dobchev. I have to mention him because he was in Doctor Who. He was also in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, The Spy Who Loved Me, Fiddler on the Roof. He, of course, played a Russian official in that. Anna Karenina. He was also, here's my Adam and Pete reference, he was in Before Sunset. He was the bookstore manager.
Yeah, that's where. And also, just to give you the role that he was in Indiana Jones, he's the butler.
Yes.
You know, Tapestries, that's him.
And he is still making stuff right now. He's on The Romanoffs, the Amazon TV series. So I'm assuming he's typecasted Russian, but
which unfortunately just got canceled.
Aw. Well, I go hoping for a good ending. And finally, just to round it out.
Just around the corner.
CIA chief Robert Arden. He did most famously play the lead character in Mr. Arkadin, Orson Welles' movie that he did not do well with. It bombed. But he was also in The Depraved and The Child and The Killer.
He made an appearance in Little Shop of Horrors, so his career has been validated.
He was like one of the side characters.
Network exec number one. Yeah. I don't even know what that refers to in that movie. Does someone offer Audrey or something? Whatever.
It's the Meek Shall Inherit the Earth sequence.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've seen that movie fully through in a long, long time. So yeah, that's the cast. A lot of people for...
And today's the day that I learned The Bourne Identity was originally a 3-hour, 2-episode miniseries in 1988.
Yes.
Starring Richard Chamberlain and Jacqueline... All right, let's get out of here. Jacqueline Smith? Wow.
I've seen that come up a lot when I've done casting.
Courtney...
Yes.
There's some music that plays during this film.
Barely.
Barely. But what's going on with it?
There's at least one song, and it was written by Henry Mancini. And I could have sworn that we had seen his name pop up before in something, but I couldn't find out what it was. I don't know if maybe he like wrote a song for something else that we've watched. If I did it in one of my posts in the group, I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, I couldn't find him anywhere. So what he's best known for is incorporating jazz into film scores. So in the 50s, he started to incorporate those sounds, which hadn't been used previously. But the theme you might best know him for is the Pink Panther theme. Aside from that, you probably also know the Peter Gunn theme. So those are the two big ones that you'll know.
I don't know Peter Gunn.
Yeah.
You would know it if you heard it.
Somebody it's one of those.
Is it Spy Hunter? Is it the easiest way to say it? Spy Hunter.
I guess. I don't know.
I'll just play it for her.
Yeah, that's good. So aside from the Pink Panther theme and the Peter Gunn theme, other notable scores he's written are Creature from the Black Lagoon, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Charade, Mommy Dearest, Victor Victoria, The Great Mouse Detective, which we'll be watching soon, and The Glass Menagerie. He was nominated for 18 Oscars, of which he won 4. So he won Best Song from Moon River, from Breakfast at Tiffany's, and Best Score from the same film. He also won Best Song for Days of Wine and Roses from that film of the same name, and Best Score for Victor Victoria. And I thought this was pretty incredible. He was nominated for 72 Grammys, and he won 20 of those.
God.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
That's crazy. 72?
So, yeah. So in case, Melissa, in case you couldn't hear it, down, 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 down,
down,
down, down.
Yeah.
No, nothing?
Sure, I think I've heard it.
Okay.
You just listen to it later. You'll know.
Yeah.
You'll know.
It's on your
But yeah, that's a... That's Henry Mancini.
Henry Mancini.
Our Condor Man.
Yeah. Condor Man.
Yeah.
So that's really all that we had on the history of it, quite honestly. So I guess we should start talking about the movie. And Adam, since this is your... Is this your first ever classic movie review with us? Or had you joined us on a previous episode for something else?
I know I joined in for a lot of the stuff that came out in the theaters and we talked about, but I'm not sure if I did classic review or not.
Yeah, so this was your first class. Well, let's use that term lightly. this is your first classic review. So, how did this go for you? Let's just talk about the opening of the film. I will say right now, was not expecting the opening the way the credits ran or the opening crawl.
No, we get a nice little animated sequence there, and that's abruptly murdered by a car on the road at some point. The animated condor man flies into it. But you know, I don't know. Like I don't know what I was expecting here. I thought I was getting into a superhero film, then it turned into a James Bond ripoff. And for a movie called Condor Man, we see surprisingly very little of Condor Man.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest takeaways. Was that I don't know why this movie was called Condor Man.
I didn't like the squishy sounds in the beginning.
What do you mean the squishy sounds?
It was like squishy when he walked up before you saw like the animated character. It was
You're right.
It was like this weird squishy sound, and I was like, what is going on right now? Because we had this really, like, you know, specific-looking Condor Man logo, and it was like...
But, I think that's at least on purpose. You know, they set you up like, oh, this is like a serious-looking... And then there's an animated guy, and they even have a Goofy scream.
Yeah, the wahoo.
Yeah,
that's the old Goofy. Yeah, I was going to say it's the old Goofy one.
Yeah, the old Goofy holler is in there right from the beginning to let you know what's going on. And then sort of off we go on this weirdly pan-scanned shot, very narrow-feeling movie where the flying looks like garbage. They only do it twice in the whole movie. And I guess because you can see the wires very clearly. I think it looked really bad. Something I also thought, you know, because I was like, oh, wow, this is after Superman. How could you not make this look better than Superman? They basically put Harry Oslo, who plays James Hampton, in Perry White's clothes from Superman 1978. Like, the man is wearing his wardrobe. So they seem to want it, you know, to have these little touches here, you know, comic book character. But they just don't have any... There's nothing in the film that sticks out at all.
No, and I'm sorry, but Woody was annoying. He was just grating.
How, yeah. In what way? What do you mean? Like, his voice? What? Don't say everything. That's why I wanted to stop you right there.
Well, his voice... His voice is bad. His mannerisms are bad. The way that he talks to What's-Her-Face is bad. There's a lot of bad. He's just mostly stagey.
He's very, very stagey.
Yeah, he's very, like, overly dramatic. But, like, in a way where, like, if he was my friend, I'd be like, yo, you need to calm down.
But
like,
this isn't real life. It's a movie, you know.
Calm down.
He doesn't... You know who he looks like to me? He looks like the lowest rent Robert Redford that you could ever find.
I was going to say, he kind of reminds me of the lowest rent Eric Idle.
Sure. And then when Barbara Carrera showed up, I was like, oh, she's supposed to be our Faye Dunaway. Because she has the same face as Faye Dunaway, but without any, it's like, you know, the chops. Not that they have much to work with in the movie. And also, just to bring up there, you know, Day of the Condor came out in 75, starring Robert Redford. So again, I don't know if someone is making all of these connections and like, hey, we're going to have all these different pieces.
Yeah, like maybe it's of its time, but I don't know.
And, you know, for anyone coming up with the, like the Russian names, Natalia, Krakow, I don't know. They're just, they're very baseline, but that's fine. Whatever. They don't have to be like incredibly creative on that one. When the movie first started, I was shocked at how bad it looked.
Yeah, it didn't, like, it almost looked like somebody put a filter and then, like, it just had that, like, saturation the whole way through. Like,
I would just think they just took the cameras outside. Like, there wasn't much of a lighting crew.
I mean, that's probable.
They just shot, you know, they shot it like they had to light up a TV show and move on to the next thing. There's nothing cinematic feeling about the movie at all.
Except the car chase scenes.
But the car chase scenes, even though you watch them and you're like, wow, that's a pretty cool stunt. Like that boat just went between two other boats at full speed. But you don't, it's not shot in an exciting way. There was one shot that I was like, oh, that was really cool. Later on, when, you know, the laser gun is unleashed. What a moment that was. Because he had a sketch of it from his comic books and he was like, put this together, CIA guy. And he's like, I don't know how to do this off of your sketches. And but he was able to make a laser gun. There's a really cool shot where you're on like the bow. You're on, like this. You're hanging off one of the ships as they're chasing him and it shoots and the lasers like go right past and diagonal over the camera. And I was like, oh, that looked really cool. It was kind of X-Wing Star Wars-y looking, you know? But that was legitimately 3 seconds of the whole scene.
What is this, 81? Was there a Star Wars film around here?
There were two of them already. There was 1977 was the original, 1980 was Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, so Empire was right before.
So when you
this,
look
okay.
at those films and the effects in those movies that are happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And Disney puts this out on a $15 million budget, which is nothing.
Yeah, but back in the 80s, was it still like nothing?
Yeah, $15 million is still nothing.
Really?
But that's the thing with Disney during this era. It's just the cheapest way it can be done, and it seems like it's two steps behind everything else.
Yeah, I read that 81 was not a great year for them.
No, financially, this is a very hard time coming up for the studio where things
hard
go
times.
Very, very poorly. Courtney, though, can I ask you, I have an opinion. I think it's... What did you think of Oliver Reed, though, amidst all of this Crawfordiness?
I thought he was great. Like, if he was in a completely different movie, like, that would have made sense to me. But somehow he was in this movie.
He's really good.
He's great. I thought he was great. Yeah.
Like, he's even written well. That's the more puzzling part. It's like, not only is he playing it well, he's actually written really well. Adam, I think you'll appreciate this because, I mean, we grew up really reading comics and this and that, and it was never a cool thing. And whenever you saw it in a movie, usually, it was treated like a joke. This movie, for all that it doesn't do right, it never degrades the main character because he's a comic book artist. It never even degrades, like, the villain, Krokov, Oliver Reed, after realizing, like, he writes comics. He reads them to try to figure out the man's next move.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really cool thing surrounded by terrible. So who was writing the thing for Krakow? But I actually really appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were going to touch on that a little bit more during the scene where she finds out that Woody is really a comic book character. Let's go back to the immediate comic book convention that happened on top of that mountain for some reason. There's just 100 children with comic books simultaneously there.
Tuesday. It was release
20
day.
Swiss children who know English perfectly clear.
Well,
all had comics on them.
Yeah. And no, but I thought they were going to have her be upset, you know, like because of the situation, and they didn't go that way. And I actually appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took a note, like, when we first are interacting with Woody and Harry in the opening, and, you know, Harry's like, you've been here for however long or whatever. I made a note that Harry reminded me of when Michael Eisner, right? That's the guy?
I don't know what you're talking about, back so in, I don't know yet.
Who's the Disney CEO back then?
Well, back then it's Ron Miller. It became, no. Eisner comes in soon.
Okay, yeah, Eisner. He reminded me of when Eisner would do like those terrible like...
Oh, yeah.
Acting like with the cartoon characters like,
yeah.
Mickey, what are you doing on my desk? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it is kind of... It's in that area. I remember that man dressed up like a wolf.
Yeah, he's always, Teen Wolf's dad.
He's Teen Wolf's dad. And when he wolfs out in the kitchen, he's like, we're wolves. It's just, by the way. The movie doesn't start off well for me. I don't, the goofy comedy doesn't make me laugh, but there is something reassuring when Oliver Reed shows up. But also my head goes, how did you get one character so right and everything else so bad? Maravich is brought in as basically really the villain. But he is puzzling because I don't know why he's wearing an eye patch.
He does like the like first 20 minutes we see him.
He keeps lifting his helmet off.
Lifting the visor like, my eye.
Yeah,
my
eye. He keeps trying to show people his eye.
And then he goes to Krokov and Krokov's like, I can't deal with your eye. Put an eye patch on, please.
Is that what he said to him?
I don't know. I'm just assuming that's a cutscene.
Oh, okay.
Because after he's like involved with Krokov, like there's in scenes together, he always has an eye patch on. So it just in my head, it's like Krokov one time was just like, no, I cannot. You need an eye patch when you're near me.
Yeah. Was there an explanation that I missed for the eye patch?
No, I think they're just going for a Blofeld thing, you know.
But then why show the golden eye? I don't get it.
Because that's when he's dangerous.
Not the golden eye. What am I talking about? Who's Christopher Lee? No, not man with the golden gun. He didn't have it. Someone had a bullet eye.
That wasn't that in the Pierce Brosnan ones?
No, there's something that's before it because that was where Last Action Hero was riffing on it.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyways, Last Action Hero is really good, by the way.
It is.
You should go back in time and just tell people, like, no, your kids are going to love it.
I appreciated when they walked into Restaurant Marrakesh. That was the only thing that I could.
Yeah, this did look like Epcot, right? I mean, it looks like they straight up went to Epcot.
So, like...
But that was on site, though. So, like, word up to you look great, Epcot. That pavilion is spot on. You could film Condor Brand 2 there tomorrow. And I would think you're still on thing.
I'm pretty sure this movie was an elaborate vacation by a few people at the studio.
Yeah, I mean, they went to some nice places. Mm-hmm. Courtney, does anything in this movie work for you outside of Oliver Reed?
No, absolutely not. I watched this movie twice today. I told you guys I was going to watch it one time. I watched it a second time.
Should have done it.
I don't remember anything additional from watching it the second time. I don't care anymore about any of the characters. I took away nothing positive. So, no, Oliver Reed, great. I like our Condor Man. But other than that, I'm kind of like, nope.
Did you wonder if they would stop loading the front of every car with 100 pounds of dynamite?
I did wonder that. I also wondered how many things a given vehicle could change into. I was very confused.
Melissa, do you want to point out the thing that you noticed during one of the big action sequences when Condor Man drove downhill?
It wasn't Condor Man. It was one of the villains because it was
the black
car.
Oh, that's right. It was Maravich's car.
And he was driving down the hill after being like, oh, yeah, on the peak, on the lookout.
I thought he was in a plane, I legitimately said, like, is he in a plane now? And she said, no, he's on a hill. I was like, oh, okay. Because I didn't know how the hell he got up there. I was really confused.
Really close attention. But I did pay close enough attention because as soon as he comes off like the dirt road onto like the actual road, he loses his front bumper. It was just brilliant because you could not miss that unless you were not looking on the screen.
His car front bottoms so hard that the bumper comes off and he drives over it. And then in the next cut, the car is just fine.
It's fine.
But it's right there. Like they did it once. They're like, yo. He lost the bump. No, cut it. We're good.
Leave it.
Yeah, we're moving on.
I was kind of perplexed by, like, I guess just how quickly they fell in love. But
I know it's
a movie, so I can't really say anything. I thought it was really interesting because they, like, then when Natalia goes back with Krokov, I feel like they tried to, like develop this whole history with the two of them.
That seemed real exciting. That seemed really interesting.
Oh, okay. Like, what's going on here? He kind of maybe seems to maybe care about her a little bit and kind of wants to I don't know, but like, I wanted to know more about their relationship, quite honestly. Like, I could understand why she wants to defect and leave, but like,
well, she also wants to get away from him because obviously he's very controlling and doesn't
let her
do anything.
Oh yeah, he's like a murderer. Like, I totally understand, but it's just like kind of interesting how, you know, there, I don't know, honestly, there seemed to be more chemistry between the two of them than her.
Absolutely. And her. Well, I mean, if you're her, I would definitely want to bag Oliver Reed before Michael Crawford.
Yep.
I mean, come on. Oliver Reed's walking around. He's like, my thing, that scene happened when he talks with Natalia in the room and he's like, you know, if you go away, the, you know, we'll have to come up with a cover story so they don't kill you and this and that and all this. And I said, oh, is this the plot? Like, is this what this movie is? Is this what's going on in this movie? Because I had no idea what was the point of her defecting before that? Like, she was just like a citizen that the entire CIA was working to get.
Well, no, she was in the KGB. They did mention that early on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fake.
No.
Okay.
They were supposed to be like two citizens going for the meetup. Of course, America was like, yeah, we'll send a citizen. And Russia was like, we're not sending a citizen. We're sending the KGB.
Oh, see, I thought that she was a fake also.
No.
Okay.
Yes, Courtney.
So, yeah, at that point, yes, Courtney.
Real quick, can we talk about how they're hanging on to those things at the end and how bad it looks when they fall off? And it's just like...
Oh, the skis? Oh, the snow angel scene?
It's literally the worst thing maybe I've ever seen. And then the scream that she does in response to that, and then her face right afterward where she's like not emoting at all and then tries to look a little bit concerned. That sequence is maybe the funniest thing. I need a gif of that so bad.
When they cut to them, you can also see a set of footprints walking in front of their bodies.
Yeah.
Which is just the icing on the cake on that. Yeah. And that was, I took that as a nod to the, it's a Carol Reed movie. I can't remember the name of it. Sorry, I blanked. I had it written down. There's a classic spy film. I believe it's directed by Carol Reed, where there's people like going across a ski lift. You know, when it gets stuck in the middle. But that was my other thing. That when that scene happened, they're like, oh, we've got these rockets and we're going to use these rockets to get up the ski lift. And my thought was, well, isn't that how a regular ski lift works?
They don't have rockets.
Why don't
on
you
them?
Just get in the ski lift? Because it wasn't like the rocket was moving at such a great pace. It was going the speed of, oh, say, a ski lift would go. Very puzzling. Absolutely puzzling. Adam... In three sentences, what's the plot of this movie?
Oh, geez. Wannabe comic book writer, tries to be a spy, fails, sort of.
There we go.
That was a good summary.
The elevator pitch.
Yeah.
His costume's upsetting at the end. It looks like a turkey, like a cheap turkey costume that like your father would wear on Thanksgiving to be like, hey, we're going to serve up the turkey. And then, like, you know your parents have sex with it later.
Ew.
But that whole costume was just disappointing in so many ways. But if we may, there is some costumes being worked. There are some disguises being worked in here. And I know the second one is the more, like, woof, 80s one. But the first one, when Harry breaks them out of prison, not breaks them out of prison, but gets them out of prison, he looks like Peter Falk opened the Covenant. That's exactly what I thought of. And on the side note, I was like, not a bad disguise. I actually thought it was pretty good.
No, the makeup was pretty good in all the disguises.
And then to escape the police, they got into this wedding thing, but then just sit with all the family and constantly look over their shoulders at the bad guys. And it's just so many like silly.
My favorite part of that entire scene was the lingering shot on the two grandmas in the babushkas, like,
oh, fighting each other.
That was my favorite.
I assume that was like the two sides of the family then fighting each other.
Yeah,
but I liked, see, like that actually ended as like a clever scene. She gets up and says, what are you doing? I'm your wife.
Yeah,
the like children. That was actually pretty good. I was like, oh, this is good. But for every couple of seconds of that, there's general boredom. Like, not
terrible
much is happening.
Gun cane for whatever that
I was. Laughed.
But like, I feel like you shouldn't have been laughing at that moment. Or it just went on way too long. I don't know.
But you are supposed to be laughing. It's a comedy. The Kane was not like, this is our Hamlet moment, everyone. It's a slapstick comedy.
I guess it just went on too long. It was just so annoying. I'm like, it did. I get it.
It must have had 1,000 bullets in it, and it went on for a little too long. And he's just not very funny.
No, he is not.
That was what I wrote down with the suit. I said it looks like bologna, like the actual meat bologna.
I did like, gross, though, before they do the whole car chase thing, how you have, like, you have the scene of all the villagers, and then all of a sudden they just, like, turn and all stare at something off in the distance. I could not.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know
what was
going on at first. I was like, what's going on? What are they all looking at?
And then a bell tolls and they run for it. And I was like, are we supposed to know what's going on?
Yeah, the bad guys were coming. That was what it was. They just didn't show us that the bad guys were coming. It was really weird.
And the bad guys were very effective at finding our two heroes. It seemed like constantly they were intercepting them with little to no, you know.
Every major city has a road. Yeah. It's a thoroughfare. That's all it is. Going back to the skiing thing, I want to point out that Harry lost about 70 pounds in that scene because his stunt actor did not match what that man actually looked like. All up to James Hampton, but not a good match on the stunt actor. Adam, later in this film, things happen. There's a powerboat sequence. This is after the whole ski lift thing happens and baloney suit. There's a scene after that. It doesn't even end. Like, the finale of the movie isn't him becoming Condor Man. It is just the bridge to a longer finale, which is a boat chase. So we go the full Spy Hunter Peter Gunn theme kicks in now. What did you actually think of this whole boat chase scene, though, and that reveal?
I was a little confused because at one point Condor Man has a fully realized Batmobile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know they did that with the vehicle as well. Very conspicuous. Mm-hmm. no hiding there.
Matchbox car?
Yeah. I was on board with the boat chase, and then they introduced lasers, and I was just, I laughed at it because I'm like, whoa. But just the erratic shooting that was going on.
That got the biggest reaction on me. When he fired off that gun, I was like, what am I watching? Like, that was the moment that almost broke me, where
I wrote down, I said, they gave him a laser, with a lot of question marks and exclamation points.
How did you enjoy the old laser boating, Courtney?
I mean, it was fine. I just wasn't surprised anymore at this point. I was like, oh, this movie's getting more ridiculous. Okay, here I am.
So, you know, the helmets that they're wearing right before that, the big yellow helmets, were helmets all that large? Like, those things were massive. They looked like the size of the Spaceball helmets. And all I could think of was, have we come that far in technology that, like, helmets don't have to look this ridiculous anymore? Had nothing to do with the movie, but yeah. I don't know why I wrote this, but maybe you guys can explain this. I wrote down the cliffside surprise. Oh, the cliffside surprised Morovich in the most Austin Powers way possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a way to go out.
He's a good quarter mile from that canyon wall when he starts yelling at it almost.
I did not turn the boat. At all.
How does he not see it? Also, his plan was to smash them with a boat?
I mean,
it's a good, actually, it's not a bad plan, but Oliver Reed just, he exits stage left.
Yeah, that was a typical boss level ending counter that just went horribly.
Yeah.
So in 90 minutes worth, we're brought all over the world. The humor doesn't really work. The costume looks terrible.
Wait, you're not summing up yet, are you?
No, I'm just trying to find if there's anything good in here.
You forget the last bit.
And what is that?
They're at a Dodgers game.
They are at a Dodgers game.
And they literally, on the side of a blimp, let everyone know that Natalia, who is clearly Russian, is here in the USA. Like, hopefully there's no other KGB looking for her in the LA, because she's at the Dodgers game with the Goodyear blimp advertising the fact that she is there.
They use her name?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you right now, I was not watching.
I know.
Yeah. And she says what literally every woman would say if her name was on a blimp. My very own airship. Like, what?
I would just say that message would probably be decidedly different today.
Yes. Yeah.
Their kissing is gross.
Yeah.
Disgusting. There's just nothing there.
It's because he doesn't have lips.
Thank God they didn't open mouth kiss. I would have broken my television.
Probably in the contract.
It's in her writer. I cannot open my mouth.
I went into this movie like, oh, this is going to be some good bad. And there's a couple of spots where that happens. But on the overall, it's just ineffective. It's not funny. It looks so badly shot. Like, nothing has anything to it.
Yeah.
It looks like a TV movie. Barely above a TV movie.
I wonder if they got, you know, like, if they redid it, like, in 4K or something, it might be better.
No.
So we can see more baloney?
No, yes. Please.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I mean, format to stay around. We don't want it to die.
Now, I am curious. I couldn't find anything out because this movie exists in a black hole now. Did they shoot it in widescreen and then it's only available now in Panascan because the original prints are like thrown into the ocean. So they just had to take encodes from like VHSs because that's how terrible this thing looks.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
And there are some shots where there are people on opposite ends of the frame and they're a little cut off. And I just don't see them shooting a movie like that and then cutting off people. I mean, it's possible. But the way that things are framed within the scene, I don't know if we're losing a third of the picture on either end.
I don't know.
We are. Aspect ratio 2.35.
Oh, there you go. Where'd you find that?
Is that on IMDb.
Okay, yeah. I missed that. So we're watching a TV version of this movie because I wonder if they even have the original film that they could transcode over, you know, like make a copy of and digitalize. I doubt it.
It's in the vault below the vault. Nothing comes out of that one.
I know
one.
Disney keeps everything. I don't know if they kept this. I just don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Do you really want a better version, though?
I'd at least like to see how they shot it originally. I would. Yeah, I actually would like to see how they shot it originally. Because maybe that would help in me feeling like everything is so cramped and so just non-breathable. There's just nothing to look at.
Yeah.
And that might be a very large part of it. And that explains also why in certain scenes, I'm looking at the left and the right, and I'm like, why would you cut off the lead actor's face that much? Or the lead actress's face in the same scene? You would just have them take half a step closer, you know, towards the middle of the frame. But
no,
this
doesn't want to be that close.
I was going to say with 2.35 aspect ratio, there would be certain scenes where all the characters would be on screen and they would shift the camera and pan and scan to focus on whoever's talking. I didn't really notice that a whole lot. I didn't notice that.
I don't know if that was even a thing because maybe they just cut over to another single shot.
Yeah.
So I think there's a. It's not going to make the film any better. You know, it's not going to make the jokes work any better or Michael Crawford acting get any better or the shooting of, you know, the overall like palette of the movie get any better. But it is weird to see an almost edited version of this film, but it's the one that's offered as the version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's different if you buy it on DVD, but I highly doubt it.
No. They would have ported that over to iTunes at some point.
There's no reason it would have been different, right?
Yeah.
And this movie not available on Prime or even to rent on Amazon, which is weird also.
Amazon's like, we know better. We're not putting this up here.
So Courtney, was there anything, though, like that maybe you would go back and be like, this was kind of fun?
I really feel like I addressed that already, and the answer is a definitive no.
No, yeah.
I mean, I want it to be positive. I wanted that too. I was like, okay, we've had some like fun, weird. We've had some midnight madness. We've had things that have been positive-ish, and I just don't. I can't with this at all.
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, I lost a lot of interest in this. Like. Really quickly, Michael Crawford was just so grating that, like, I just didn't care. I didn't care what he did. I didn't care if Krokov killed him, found him, whatever. Like, I'm on Krokov's level. Like, yeah, give me the girl. Get rid of the guy. I don't care. He's expendable. Like, he's just annoying. But Which is, yeah, like Quinn, you were saying, like, it's disappointing because we have had some good, goofy, weird out there, you know, movies that I'm like, I go along with and I can get into. But this one, I walked downstairs for a minute. I was like, I know I'm not going to miss much. I need to walk away for a second. I feel bad, but yeah.
Yeah. So should we do our three questions?
Sure. What do you even remember them?
Yeah, it's been a while. One is, what's the iconic shot of the film? God help us all.
Oh, goodness.
Number two, what is the moral of the film and does it achieve its goal in getting that moral across? Number three, does it hold up?
I think we answered number three pretty unanimously.
I want to know if anyone has an answer for number one. Does it have an iconic shot?
I would say when he's in the costume at the very beginning of the movie, before when Harry's taking the picture, I would say that's a good shot personally.
Yeah, that would probably be the best one on the Eiffel Tower.
Oh yeah, this movie started at the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, I wrote down that the Eiffel Tower wasn't curved like it is in Soren. So.
Womp womp.
Yeah. That's the only reason.
Courtney, did anything visually remember? Did you remember anything that was like?
I mean, the shot that I remember the most is him getting kissed by Natalia and then like dragging half his face down. that was my iconic shot.
I'm going to give it to that car losing its front fender, front bumper. No, you know, I'm gonna give it the laser shot over the bow of the boat. I was like, that's pretty good. Also, you couldn't tell that was Condor Man from it at all, but like, I was like, that's cool. You give me that shot, say Condor Man, I'd be like, all right, what's going on in this movie?
And then you watch the whole film.
I don't think there's a moral. I think it's just supposed to be a riff on 007.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it does it very well.
No, because there are other movies that do it much better.
Yeah.
There's been millions of them. No, I'm just trying to think of like all the different ones because I feel like I know there's Austin Powers like the classic one, but I feel like there's other ones as well. And I feel like I've watched them and I've had like more interest in them. I couldn't name them.
My God. Adam, help me. Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, spy thing.
Oh, Spies Like Us?
Nope.
Or no?
Nope.
No.
Secret Agent Man? I'm blanking on it now.
It's not Real Genius. It's,
no, Real Genius is amazing, though. I'm going to look that up right now. Val Kilmer, spy spoof. Guys, the spelling that I just put into here is kind of amazing. And I didn't get it in there correctly. Top Secret. That was what the name of it was.
That's
a good one. That's a real good one. Does anyone think that it had a moral and achieved it?
No.
Mm.
No. And then finally, and probably most, I believe we know Courtney's answer on this. Adam, does it hold up? Is there anything redeemable in this that you would refer it to somebody else to see?
No, I would actively go out of my way not to refer it to somebody else.
Melissa?
I would not inflict this on somebody else. At all.
Unfortunately, I'm in the same boat. I don't think it has enough silliness to be... It's not bad enough to be entertaining. It's not good to be entertaining. It's in that middle ground of... I think they had a really good idea. Like, this idea works.
Yeah. Just not here.
It just doesn't work in this film. But if it was sharper and a little funnier here and there, it could have been very enjoyable. But they just don't.
I think if you even just change Michael Crawford, because I don't think anybody else is really that, like...
No, either do I. I'm with you on that.
So
yeah.
It's like, if you just made that one change, and was he even that big of a name that, like, getting him is, like, a big thing?
No. But, you know, Disney, I don't think that... I've never been someone that's like, you got to hire people with a big name, because then no one ever gets another role.
No, but
he was very
like
well
this...
known from Hello Dolly. Hello Dolly. But, I mean, you know, he's been in the game for like a decade plus at this point. He's known. He's not as well known as he's going to be in a couple of years when he dons a mask. But, you know, that's how these things work.
I know. I was just trying to think of like there was a reason as to why they picked him.
No one else came. I don't know. There must have been something.
No one else showed up for auditions.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do a lot of TV. He actually takes a break from acting almost pretty much, unless he's doing stage work, from 72 to 78. Mm-hmm. He was in an Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. There's a TV version as a white rabbit. And then he doesn't appear in anything again until a TV series in 1978. So, no, this was a full release movie. My God.
Yes, it was.
For the Alice's Adventure in Wonderland, because they made a million of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he doesn't help at all. Do you think there's any salvaging? Like, Adam, do you see it the same way Melissa does? Like, hey, if you tweak this, you're on the right road?
I think if you eliminate all the Condor Man stuff, just you're cramming in a superhero and a spy thing. I think if you got rid of all that and just played it for the laughs, you know, like you could have kept the bumbling shtick going and that sort of thing, maybe punched up the funny a bit and just left all the Condor Man stuff out. And I think it might have worked a little better.
Yeah, because there's that weird mix between, like, it's a superhero, but he also has, like, spy gadgets. Like, I understand, like, you know, it's almost like a funny Batman kind of thing. But I don't know. I guess there's just too many elements that are, like, mixed. And you ever have the kitchen sink cookie from Panera? It sounds like it's a good idea, but there's just way too much stuff in there. And you're like, just give me the chocolate chip, thank you. I feel like that's this.
All right, I can see where that's coming from. Courtney, do you think there's any salvaging here at all, or is it just on fire?
I mean, I think if you went the opposite direction, like you either take Condor Man all the way out, or you put him all the way in to where, like, instead of being, like, it's very clearly a spoof, and this guy is he thinks he is this character, and he ends up in these situations, then you're ramping up the comedy, and then you have a reason for that character to be there.
True.
Otherwise, yeah. I'm with Adam, and you just take him all the way out.
Yeah, or just see, like, instead of him writing Condor Man comics, he writes spy comics.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. Then that's it. Then there's been a bunch of movies like that. Like, I'm a writer of this genre, and now I'm stuck in this genre, and I have to get myself out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that, like, the whole premise for Murder, She Wrote? Kind of? Like, she writes murder mysteries, but then she always finds herself in a murder mystery?
Yeah, it seems convenient. So yeah, Condor Man, guys.
She's a serial killer.
Condor Man's bad. I know some people like wave the flag of Condor Man, I guess, in like irony, but it's not even funny in like an ironic fashion. It's just bland and bad, and deserves to not be remembered.
Poor Condor Man.
We've got better stuff coming up, though. I think we're going to see some good stuff soon. I have more hope for us going forward.
There's two movies I am looking forward to, at least.
Yeah, Return to Oz twice in a row.
Not that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Feruza Balk is coming for you.
No.
Just to let everyone know, you know, in case you're not on the Facebook page, which God bless your soul. We are going back to a weekly format. I will be hosting every other week as we do these classic reviews. But as we get closer to Mandalorian, we are going to do our Road to Mandalorian series, which is going to be Akira Kurosawa and some samurai films, movies that have direct influence over Mandalorian. It'll be a lot of fun. We're basically going to be doing our second really deep dive the way that we did it with Great Movie Ride. We're going to be doing that here as well.
I'm excited because I haven't seen any of those.
Yeah, one of them is very long. I mean, look, I'm going to, you know, you're all... That's just know it. Our next film, though, is Tron. Our next classic review is Tron. So, you know, saddle up programs. We're going in. And then we got good stuff coming all the way down the block. We got Something Wicked This Way Comes, Return to Oz, The Black Cauldron, The Great Mouse Detective, Flight of the Navigator, Benji the Hunted?
No.
Maybe.
No, Oliver and Company.
Oliver and Company. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Guys, it's coming around.
Little Mermaid.
That movie's not good. I'm just kidding. All right, guys. Well, hey, I had fun this week. Did you all have fun this week?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, have a good week out there, everyone. Be good to each other. Go see some movies. If you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and you're of age, go see that. Go see Midsummer if it's maybe playing near you still. Bear in a Cage. Always a good thing to check out. And I think that's it for us.
I think that's it.
All right. You know where to find us, lastgenpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod, Facebook, Disney Magic Hour, join the group. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Instagram. We are Disney Magic Hour Podcast. We are patreon.com/DizMagicHour if you want to support the show. And this is what we do, and we enjoy doing it. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Adam.
Goodnight, Adam.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Good night, Pete. Good night, folks. Good night, Condor Man.
Good night. out.
Forever.